Okay, that brings us to the speaker tonight. Please help me welcome our speaker. Our speaker is Johnny N. from the Rule 62 group in Lake Silkworth.
Hi everybody, my name is John Zoder, I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Jeff for asking me to speak. It's an honor and privilege to get to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous today, especially participate in a meeting like this. The cool part about this is I've been to different meetings out of my area, man, and we're blessed. We're part of a worldwide fellowship that anywhere we go, we find people like us. And I'm a guy that spent my entire life trying to find somebody I fit in with. And I'm blessed today with meetings like this with people like you because I'm home. That's the best way I can describe it, is I'm home. And it's an honor to be here and participate. And there's only one reason I'm here. It's God's grace. There's two things I know about God's grace. One, it's not deserved. And two, it's not earned. It tells me what I did yesterday or last week or last month or last year is not going to keep me sober today. You know, it's what I do today. And I try to keep that in mind, man. This is a gift. This is not something I earned. And so when I'm asked, I say yes. And I'm just grateful to be a part of it. And the cool part is I'll leave here higher than I've ever been before in my entire life. And that is ridiculous to me. And that's why I do stuff like this. Because what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is a bigger buzz than I found out there drinking and using. It's the only reason a guy like me stays here. So with that, I have a sobriety date. It's December 5th, 2001. I have a home group. It's Rule 62 group in Lake Silkworth, Pennsylvania. It's a great group. I can't say it's the best group in the world because I haven't been to all of them, but it's a good group. If you're ever in town, come visit us, man. It's on Tuesday nights at 7:30, and it's a great group. A lot of solution there, and it saved my life. I know that. And I've been asked to share my story. And I find the directions on how to do that in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're not a big fan of the Big Book, you're not going to like me. Because it's the only thing I've ever been taught. It's the only thing that I've ever been showed on how to get sober and stay that way. And I thank God for that. Because, you know, I sit in meetings where there's a lot of this stuff talked about. Why didn't that stuff get filtered to me? Thank God it didn't. Because I'm going with the masses. There may be other stuff that works to treat alcoholism. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say there isn't. But I'm going with 3 million strong in 70 plus years because my life hangs in the balance of this deal. So until I find something that treats 3 million in 70 years at last, I'm staying with Alcoholics Anonymous. The book gives me directions. It says each individual in their personal stories describes in his own way from his own point of view exactly how they establish a relationship with God. So what I'm going to tell you about tonight is a little bit about what didn't work and a lot more about what does work, or at least has to this point. Growing up from a very, very early age, as far back as I can remember, 5, 6, 7 years old, I remember kindergarten. I actually remember this. First day of kindergarten, I remember being there and this internal feeling that I did not fit in. I'm not like these other kids, man. They're not going to like me. Was there 6 years old. I don't know where that came from, but it was there. And I come to find out in Alcoholics Anonymous, after I get sober, that's part of alcoholism. I just felt disconnected. It was like almost like I got dropped on the wrong planet. You know, I just didn't feel like I was a part of anything or fit anywhere I went. Because of that, being convinced that I was defective, I became the act. And my act was, who do you want me to be? I'll be whoever you want me to be so you will like me. And that's the person I became. If I was hanging out with the troublemakers, I became the troublemaker. If I was hanging out with the kids that did good in school, I became the kid that did good in school. You know, as a result of that act, one of my greatest fears became all the different groups of all the different people in my life would show up at the same time in the same place. And how am I going to act? Because that's all I ever was. Somewhere around 13 years old, and from 6 on, that disconnectedness intensified. It got worse and got worse and got worse. Somewhere around the age of 12, I remember being at a party. Wasn't supposed to be there. I was told not to go by my mom. And I had a great family, and I can't pin my alcoholism on my upbringing, my family. Most traumatic thing that happened to me in my upbringing was my parents got divorced when I was 9 years old. It has absolutely nothing to do with my alcoholism, and I can't blame them for this. It is what it is, and it's just the way I'm wired, and I'm completely okay with that today. But I live with my mom, and I was told not to go to this party. I did disobey her, and I went anyhow, and remember being at this party, we're in a field, kind of like out of country like we are here, and got a campfire, man, and I'm feeling this internal feeling is that these guys are going to find out who I am, they're really not going to like me, and they're going to run me the hell out of here. You know, and that feeling was so intense, it was ridiculous. And one of those guys walked up to me and handed me a can of beer. I'm 13 years old, or 12. I know I shouldn't be drinking. You know, I got taught right from wrong. I got taught morals and values. All of that stuff was given to me as I was brought up. So I knew right from wrong. But one of them hands me the beer on the act, I take it. And I drink that one, and probably halfway through the second one, the feeling went from what I just talked about to this: these guys are damn lucky that I'm here. And if you don't notice that, that's a complete personality change. And that's exactly what alcohol did for a guy like me. If I believe I'm correct, and the book says, and the doctor's opinion, Dr. Silkworth says, if I have any chance of ever recovering from this fatal disease, man, I must find a complete personality change somewhere else. And that's what our 12 steps are designed to do. You know, the book talks about a spiritual awakening. The definition of a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience is in the back of the big book in the forewords. And it says, a spiritual awakening is complete personality change sufficient to recover from the disease of alcoholism. It's the only reason I'm still here today. Because I found a personality change somewhere else. And, 13 on, I ran with that feeling, man. I couldn't do it every day, but I stored it in my memory that I'm going to drink as much as I possibly can drink because I got the greatest feeling I've ever gotten in my entire life, and I paid absolutely no consequences for it. You know, 13, I can't do it every day, but I do it every other weekend or every third weekend. And somewhere around 16, I start getting a little bit more freedom. And I'm a master manipulator. I can lie and cheat and steal my way to just about anything. And I'm not proud of those gifts today. And they're no longer part of my life, but they were for a long time. And I remember at 16, the rules in my mom's house is I can't get my license until I'm 18, so that's got to change. That can't be the case. I need freedom. I need to get out and do what I need to do, which is to drink and die. So I moved in with my dad. Because I didn't move in with my dad to be a better son, to establish a relationship with my dad, to be the son I've never been. I moved in with my dad for one reason: to get my driver's license so I can go drink. That's as simple as it gets, man. I'm a selfish, self-centered human being, and I think about nobody but me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the sad part about that is I was in that mode for a long, long time and didn't even know I was in that mode. You know, I'm wrecking people's lives trying to get what I want, and I can't see that I'm wrecking their lives because I'm so focused on me and what I want. And, I get my driver's license at my dad's and I get the freedom, and I find people that are older than me, and I start drinking on a daily basis. And my MO is to do whatever I need to do during the day to keep the people off my back that were watching me, like parents, teachers, so I could go do at the end of the day what I needed to do, which is to drink. And from 16 to 20, I drank on a daily basis. I paid very, very little consequences for that. And I just kept doing it. And I kept getting that feeling that I was okay. The best way I can describe what alcohol did for a guy like me was it killed the separation between you and me. It gave me the ability to go out and play in this world. You know, and I've heard that shared from numerous people, from numerous podiums. And that every time I hear it, it's me. It's me to the key. And, 20 years old, paying very little consequences, drinking on a daily basis. I remember being at my father's house, and I don't know what possessed me to do this day, but he had all his prescription pills on the counter. And out of respect for alcohol, so I'll keep this brief, but it's still part of my story. And I grabbed one of the bottles on the counter. I dumped four of the pills in my hand. I went in his bathroom, ate two out of the four, put the other two in my pocket, and had no idea why I just did that. 20 minutes later, I'm laying on the floor. I'm very, very happy. I know exactly why I did it. And there's another thing. Because at that time, at 20 years old, alcohol wasn't working quite as well as it was when I was 13 or 14. I was having to drink 10 times more. I was getting in more trouble. When I found the pills, it was a way to get back to that 13-year-old feeling. And I just added it. I needed to add something to the alcohol to be okay. And that was it. For the next month, I remember going to my dad's every 3 to 4 days and taking a couple of his pills at a time. My dad's not a stupid man. It's like he's Sherlock Holmes. Within 30 days, he caught me. He set me up and caught me. And I remember that day he caught me, man. It was demoralizing. It was horrible. I remember him confronting me. I tried to lie my way out of it. That wasn't working. He wasn't having it. And finally, I just basically lied to him, told him I hurt my foot at work. I was in construction at the time. I dropped something on my foot, whatever the case it was. And that's why I took him. And what I found out from that experience, and a couple others I'll share later, is alcoholism is the only disease known to man that has that absolutely will take the family out around the alcoholic before it has the mercy to take the alcoholic himself. I sold that bit to my old man, and he bought it because he didn't want to believe he had a problem, because I had a problem because maybe it was his fault. And the truth was, it wasn't his fault, and I had a problem. But he believed I hurt my foot, and he even sent me out the door with 10 more pills and said, just don't rob me next time. That's what I do. And, I got a job in construction at that time, and I was working at different houses every day, and my MO basically became, as I was working on the house, to knock on the door and ask to use the bathroom. And I went to the bathroom, raided the medicine cabinet, and took all the pills they had. And I fed prohibition as well, as drank on a daily basis for the next 4 years doing that. The latter part of that pill addiction, as I'm drinking half a bottle a day or a full bottle of Seagram 7, 101 proof permafrost, whatever it was, I was adding the pills to the mix because I needed that to get out and play. The booze just wasn't getting me out in the world anymore. I couldn't go out and hang out with my friends just drinking. I needed something else, and that was it. And my repetition is starting to get so bad with stealing from these homeowners that I knew I was going to get caught. So my thinking told me that, if I'm there and taking them, they're going to know. But if they don't know I'm there, then they can't pin it on me. So I become the guy who starts sitting outside their house waiting for relief so I can break into their house and get what I need to get. And I did that for quite a while. And somewhere, I think around 23, middle of 23, 24 years old, there was a guy at the company I worked for, the lead salesman. He was dying of pancreatic cancer. I heard the word cancer and I knew pills. I was told to go up to his house to do work on his house, legitimately the first time. The day when I was there, I ended up starting to take some steal from him. And then I found excuses to be there every so often for the next month and a half. Long story short, I remember walking in the office one day, and my boss was like, come here in the office, we need to talk. And I walked in, and there's that salesman that's dying of pancreatic cancer. And he's sitting in a chair, man, and I knew I was caught. I feel about this big inside, and I want to die. It's one of the most demoralizing experiences. This guy is dying of cancer, and I am taking the only thing that's giving him any kind of relief in the last month or 2 months of his life. And now I'm caught doing it, man. I felt like the biggest scumbag in the entire world, man. And I tried to lie my way out of that, and it wasn't working. And basically got a slap on the wrist and said, don't do it again. And if it happens again, you're getting charges pressed against you. And away I went. Walked out of that scot-free, too. And I walked out of that office, and I swore to God with every fiber of my being, I will never, ever touch another pill again or drink again. I am done. I am never going through something like that again, man. I am done. And I meant it with every fiber of my being. I couldn't have been more serious about it. And within 24 hours later, I'm doing it again. There's a paragraph in the book that talks about the strange mental blind spot. The book talks a whole chapter on your reliance must be on a higher power and not another human being because of this strange mental blind spot. And what I do, how do I know I have that? Because of the experience that I just shared with you guys. And that paragraph says we are unable at certain times to bring in our consciousness without sufficient force the memory of the pain and suffering of a week ago or even a month ago. This renders us without defense against the first drink. That tells me, man, keeping it green. I'll sit in meetings, I'll have people remember your past, play the tape through, keep it green, man, that'll keep you sober. I can't remember a week or a month ago. How the hell am I going to remember 8.5 years ago? That will not keep me sober. That couldn't keep me sober 24 hours. I walked out of that office demoralized, man. I swore I would never touch it again. Within 24 hours later, I'm doing it again. And not one time when I started to take those pills again did my head say, maybe you shouldn't do this. Remember that 24 hours earlier, man, when we were robbing that salesman and how demoralizing that was? That never even occurred to me. After I ate the pills, it showed up. And I felt guilty and the remorse and all that stuff. But it didn't show up with the force to stop me from doing it. And that happened over and over and over again. And that chapter in that book says the only defense you have from that must come from a higher power. That means no sponsor. No support group member, no member of Alcoholics Anonymous, no doctor, no lawyer, no therapist, none of them can get rid of that mental blank spot. Must come from a higher power. Shortly after I got caught there, I was basically told that if it happens again, you're going to jail. And it happened again, probably about a year later. At this point, I'm 24 and a half years old, and it's not working anymore. I can't drink enough anymore. I can't put enough pills in me to be okay, to go out and play, to be in this world, man. The last day I used, I ate over 52 Percocets, and I drank a half a bottle of Seagram 7 in 7 hours. In 7 hours of doing that, I was so drunk and high, it was ridiculous, but I still wanted to die. I hated myself so much, man. I became the guy that I hated. and I despised myself, and I could not drink that or use that away anymore. It was over. You know, and what popped into my head is I got this thing called tolerance. Tolerance applies to everybody, man. I looked at my addiction, and when it was working, I was taking two or three of them a day, and when I wanted to take them, I was controlling it, and it wasn't causing any consequences. At the end, I'm taking 52 pills and drinking half a bottle of booze, man, and I can't be okay anymore. I knew if I moved on to bigger and better things, man, it didn't matter. Tolerance is tolerance, man. I'm screwed. It's over. It does not work anymore, man. And I made a decision that day that I'm never drinking again, man. What's the point? You know, it's not working. It's not doing anything for me. Up until that point, it was working. So I could justify why I was doing it. But when it stopped working, I had no reason to do it, and I knew it, and I made a decision every morning. I'm never drinking again. Done. It's not doing anything for me but killing me. And then I meant it. Within hours, I'm drunk again. And over and over and over. Right at the end, I got caught again for the last time, stealing from another homeowner. And my boss basically said, you got 24 hours to tell your family what's going on, and you're going to jail. So good luck. And I remember sitting on the couch, and I had to pick up the phone and call my family, because if not, he was going to. And I remember having a shotgun on my lap and a phone, and I kept dialing six numbers to try to call my mom, and I couldn't dial the seventh number. I picked up the shotgun and then I put it back down and dialed six numbers. This went on for about an hour and a half, and I finally hit the seventh number. I believe that was God's grace, because my plans and designs were not to use the phone, it was the shotgun, and God intervened. I did not know that at the time. I do know that today, and I can clearly see it. And I can always see where God has been compared to where He is. You know, not that I don't know, I believe He's in my life, because I know He's in my life, but I can always see where He's been. It's always usually in retrospect, after the fact, and this is one of those experiences. And my sister at the time was she was in treatment for alcoholism. She gives me permission to share. She's an alcoholic. She came out of treatment. I remember when I was in all that trouble, I was going to jail. My head starts. I've already resigned to the fact that I can't stop. There's nothing I can do to stop. I knew that, man, with every fiber of my being. So my head goes to, I got to get out of trouble. I can't go to jail. So I remember the treatment center that my sister was in, and when she came out 2 days later, I went in, my only reason for going to that treatment center was for one purpose, so I don't go to jail. Not to get sober, not to live a better life, because I didn't believe it was possible. I didn't know Alcoholics Anonymous existed. I really didn't, man. I just believed I was going to have to drink until it killed me. I had no other choice, because I couldn't stop anyhow, and I was okay with that. But at the end, it wasn't working anymore. It was getting so painful that I wanted to die every day, and because I couldn't get relief, and I just kept trying, and the consequences kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I go into this treatment center. The first 3 days I'm there, I'm medicated so bad that I don't know who I am. So really, I can't tell you what happened those 3 days. The fourth day, they took me out of detox and sent me upstairs. And here comes the obsessive nature of my mind, man. And here comes my head starting to tell me that, you know what, you're screwed, pal. You're never going to drink again, man. What are you going to do? Just one more day. Just one more day. That's all my head kept saying to me, man. And I went down to that nurse station, faked every withdrawal symptom I could possibly think of, trying to get put back in a detox. They've seen a like of me before. They weren't having it. They're like, yeah. Just fill out a doctor's report, man, and put it over there, and he'll see you when he comes in. He's not here. I went down to the nurse station every 10 minutes and filled out a doctor's report for the next 3.5 hours. There was probably stacked that big in the bin, and it's not working, and I'm getting pissed off, and because my head just won't leave me alone, man. It's telling me one more day, and I'm sitting in the cafeteria's treatment center, and I got a big book in front of me. I have no idea what it is. I care less about it at the time, and I see my counselor coming out of the corner of my eye. So as I spot her, I open up the book and put my nose in the book like I'm reading it, man. And as I got my nose in the book, I'm like, just keep walking. Now, she doesn't keep walking. She stops dead in her tracks as soon as she sees me. I'm like, what does she want? She looks at me and she's like, you know, you're isolating. You need to get with the rest of the peers in your community. You need to start stop being alone. I said, nah, that ain't it. I said, I just don't feel good. You took me out of detox too soon. I'm just trying to read this damn book like you told me to. She looks me dead in the eye and she says, I don't think that's it. You want to know what I think? And I said, not really, but you're going to tell me anyhow. So go ahead. She's like, I think you're jonesing. And she was so dead right, I wanted to pull her eyes out of her head. And for whatever reason, I remember getting up out of the cafeteria. And it was later on in the night, man. We had to go into what a rehab calls a 10th step. And at the time, it helped, but I recommend the one out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's life-changing. The directions are in that book, how to change your life at the 10th step. And pages 84 to 88 or 10 and 11, you cannot do what those pages ask you to do and get worse. your life's going to get better whether you want it to or not. They're clear, exact, precise set of directions on how to live sober one day at a time. Very clear to the point, man. You do it, your life's going to get better. But at the time, this 10-step in treatment was, they had like six guys sitting in the room with me that were patients like me. And there was a chart up on a wall, and it was a feelings chart. Pick a feeling off the chart, man, and share about it. So, whatever. My head at this time is telling me I'm a complete scumbag. I'm in treatment, and I'm trying to scan my way back into using again. And what's wrong with me? I can't tell these guys in this room because they're going to look at me and say, you're a piece of crap, pal. What's wrong with you, man? We're here trying to get better. Get the hell away from me. I was convinced that was what they were going to tell me because I believe still at that moment I was completely alone on this planet. And for whatever reason, God's grace intervened, and I opened up my mouth, and I shared with them what I just shared with you guys about scamming my way back into detox, and I'm a piece of crap, and what's wrong with me. Not one of them said, you know what, you're a scumbag, get out of here. They all shared what their head was telling them. It was the first, my life absolutely changed at that moment. It was the first time in my life, man, that is what rocked me in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what got this place to be my home. Because it was the first time in my life I actually found a place where I fit. There was actually guys on this planet that think and feel like I think and feel. And until that moment, I was completely alone. And something changed at that moment. And I went, my head experienced 700 miles an hour in that treatment center. I really couldn't take much out of there. But I remember three things when I got shipped out the door 14 days later. And one was go to Alcoholics Anonymous if you don't want to die. Two was get a sponsor. And I heard three, something about the 12 steps. And that was it. And I did what they told me. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. First day out of treatment, I remember walking in this AA meeting, man, and I got through the door, man, and I turned my pack around to go back out the door because it just looked like I walked into a freaking PTA meeting. My description of the alcoholic is not what I saw in those seats, man. I'm in the wrong place, man. I'm out of here. And guy grabbed me before I got out the door, and he sat me down, and he got me a cup of coffee, and he's like, welcome. And the guy saved my life. I can't tell you who that guy is to this day. I've never seen him again, but he saved my life. And I remember sitting in that meeting, and because of that experience, I stayed, and I went to meetings every day for the next, I went 87 out of 90 days, and every day I'm sitting in these meetings, my head is so loud, it's like somebody's got the volume cranked at 10, and I can't hear anything, man. They're open discussion meetings, people are sharing, I can't hear a word anybody's saying. I'm leaving the meeting thinking, this is absolutely pointless, why the hell am I doing this, it's not helping, but I really didn't have anywhere else to go. I think the only thing that kept me there was that experience I had in that treatment center with those six guys. And somehow inside of me, I knew that this was the place I fit. But I just couldn't get what anybody was saying. I couldn't hear it. And I'm sitting in the same Thursday night meeting, 3 months sober, 2.5 months sober, somewhere around there. I've been in this meeting 10 times since I've been sober, 10 different weeks. Same people that were there the other 10 times are all there. Open discussion, 30 people there, 29 of them share like they always share. They're talking, I can't hear a word they're saying. Not a word, man. The volume's too loud in my head, man. And this guy opens his mouth and it's like somebody took the volume and shut it right off. And I heard this guy so crystal clear, it was ridiculous, man. Here's God's grace again in my life. And this man said, alcoholism is progressive, incurable, in most cases fatal. There's only two things on this planet to treat the fatal disease of alcoholism. One is the 12 steps and the other one is alcohol. If you're not doing either one of them, you're in the grips of the disease. It's getting progressively worse every day you live. And if you're sitting in these chairs, not applying one of those two things to your life, you're going to get worse, and you're going to know you're getting worse each day because you're going to watch the people around you who are applying those 12 steps to your life get better right in front of your eyes. And you're going to get to a place where two things are going to happen. You're either going to put a loaded gun in your mouth and you're going to kill yourself, or you're going to drink again for relief. And what I heard him say out of all of that was, Alcoholics Anonymous is not about running away from people, places, and things, because up until that point, that's what I believed it was. This is the first guy I heard say this isn't about running away from, this is about changing what you think so you no longer want to do it. And I'm 3 months over, man, and the meeting gets over, and I can't talk to anybody. I don't have the courage to look anybody in the eye. My conversations one-on-one with anybody is either I'm staring at the wall behind me, I'm looking at my shoes in my eye. If I'm picking my head up high enough, my eyes are fluttering and rolling right up in the back of my head, and I don't even know why they're doing it. I could not look anybody in the eye and talk to them, and it terrified me. And I got out of my chair. I walked right up to this guy, looked him dead in the eye, and told him who I was. I said, I really need help. Can you help me? Will you be my sponsor? This guy smiles, looks right back at me. He's like, here's the deal. I'm not your father. I'm not your brother. I'm not your best friend. I'm not your shoulder to cry on. I'm not a counselor for your affairs. As far as your problems go, I have a goddamn clue what to do with him. He's like, I can't even answer my own damn problems. He's like, if you want my help, I got one job. It's to take you through the 12 steps as outlined in that book, which will guarantee you a relationship with a power greater than yourself, and that power will fix you, not me. If you're cool with that, that's what we're going to do, if not, get lost. And the guy absolutely saved my life, man, because from that moment forward, I looked at him and I said, cool. I said, we're cool. This guy was walking around with a grace and a dignity I couldn't even wrap my head around, man. When he looked at me and asked me how I was doing, I could tell he meant it. If I could just get a tenth of what this guy's got, man, we're cool. And I became more, I said, fine. And I'd like to say I walked out of that conversation, did everything that man asked me to do in my life, got charmed, I didn't do any of it. I did the exact opposite, man. The book talks about the great delusion of alcoholics is you could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if you only manage as well. I still had ideas of how I could manage sober. You know, I had ideas of what I could do sober to fix me. I was under the delusion my whole life of having happiness and pleasure confused. Pleasure is an outside source to the world of 10,000 things. It lies in women for me. It lies in motorcycles. It lies in when I was a little kid, if I could just get that next door neighbor's bike, I could be happy. So I'd kick, scream, cry, get the bike. Am I happy for about a week? Once the bike shows up, the shine of it wears off in about 3 or 4 days. It goes in the backyard, collects dust. And now I want the next door neighbor down the road's bike. Pleasure, only outside source lasts a certain period of time. Or if I thought if I could get that girl, I could be happy. Well, I do what I need to do and I get the girl and am I happy? You know, sometimes I think after I get her, if I could get rid of her, I'd be happy. You know, the luster of the shine wears off, man, and it's not enough. And to me, that's pleasure. I heard that, you know, Scott Lee, Bob Darrell was here 2 weeks ago, and Scott, that he does his big book study with, talks about this a lot. And when he said this, it's me. Pleasure is the outside source. It only lasts a certain period of time, and it always fades and goes away. Happiness is internal, and I did not know that. It's in part of having a healthy relationship with yourself, with God, and with other human beings. And that's what I've been in disharmony with my whole life. Convinced at an early age, 6 years old, I'm defective and I can't be me. Disharmony. Running from God because of things I'm doing as a result of the act. And I'm fighting with you left and right trying to get what I need to get, being selfish, self-centered human being, complete disharmony in all three areas. Alcoholics Anonymous' steps are designed 3, 6, and 7 write you with God. 4 and 5 write me with me, and 6 or 8 and 9 write me with other human beings. Complete harmony with all 3 coming out of 9. And I'm happy for the first time in my life. You know, the attitude I remember that showed up out of step 9 for me was, I hope you like me, but I'm okay if you don't. I no longer need your approval to be okay. And my entire life consisted on your approval. If I didn't have it, I was screwed. I had the memory of one, and there's 300 people in a room, and 299 of them tell me how great I am. And one says, you're a son, you're an SOB, can't stand you. Which one do you think I focus on? I focus on that one, man. I got to make him like me and die. That was my life. And that was my whole life up until I got here and applied those principles to my life. And to back up, I remember my sponsors telling me to do things, read the book, trying to get me to do the work, and I'm ignoring them because I had plans and designs of what I could do to make myself happy sober. One of them was motorcycles. 4 months sober, I had a motorcycle. I had my addiction. I had them sober. And I remember being downtown riding with one of my friends. And the truth of the matter was I hated riding. It was just a show-off, center of attention, man. You know, look at me. And I remember being at a red light, man, smoking a backpack because there was a car full of girls sitting next to me, and I was trying to show-off. And my buddy's screaming as I'm doing this, man. I'm sitting at the site smoking his tire. The smoke clears, and he's pointing, and I look, and there's a cop sitting right there watching me do the whole damn thing. I'm like, this ain't good. So it's a one-way. He's waiting for light to turn green, and me go through the light, and he's pulling out behind me and pulling me over. Well, I'm not dumb. I'm not going through that light. So I just swung a U-ey and took off, and I went through the town, one of the towns I lived by. I went through Kingston Corners over 100 miles an hour. I almost got sideswiped by a car, and I made it through that intersection, and the cop didn't, and I got out of there. And I found out one thing: that radio is a hell of a lot faster than that bike was. I got into the next town, and I remember pulling up to the red light, come around the corner, and right up to the red light. 5 cars at the light. The light's red. The last car in line is, you know, is cop. And the light turns green, you know, so I start slowing down. I stop about 20 feet behind him and wait for the light. The light turns green. 4 to 5 cars go, he doesn't. I'm like, why the hell is he sitting there? So I'm like, maybe he's not looking for me. I'll just go around nice and slow. So that was a dumb decision. I start going alongside him to go around. There comes the light bars. There I go. Needless to say, I made it about another half a mile, and my head starts talking to me, saying, you know what, that radio's pretty fast. They're probably coming right at you. You need to get off this road. And made a decision at 100 miles an hour, got that road, and made a decision too late, and I saw the curb coming. Hit a curb over probably about 95 miles an hour. I hit a curb, and God's grace, I should be dead right now, man. And with all the stuff I've done in my life, including that, I remember, all I remember is the curb. I don't remember much after that. Next thing I remember, I'm sitting on the ground. Cop's not there yet. I know he's coming, so I try to stand up. Realize that I'm, my knees all tore to hell. I can't even stand it. I went right back down on the ground. Bike's trash, I'm trash. Cop's coming, just sit here and wait, and you're screwed. And that cop shows up. He's, needless to say, not too happy. He gets out of the car, rips me off the ground like a rag doll, throws me around, slams me on the hood of the car. I'm screaming my knees. I don't care about your damn knee. And pins me in the cuffs, pulls me off the car, drops me on my knee. I'm screaming. I'm laying on the ground. And here's what comes through my mind. 5 minutes ago, my life was starting to get, at least on the outside, a little bit more manageable. I was back to work. I was starting to make some money. I was starting to pay bills, all that stuff. And 5 minutes later, I'm face down in the dirt. I'm arrested. I'm going to jail. My driver's license is going with it. My job's going with that. I am freaking screwed, man. Take the Demerol and the morphine they're going to give you in the hospital and screw everything else. As that thought came in, they're loading me up in the ambulance. The next words coming out of my mouth, they don't give me any kind of narcotics. I'm a recovering drug addict and alcoholic, and I cannot take them. As that, those words came out, the next thought was, why the hell did I just say that? God's grace is the only thing I can attribute that to. And I got through that sober. I did not learn from it. It did not change my life, but I got through it sober. And 3 weeks later, I got some $60,000 in debt. I'm out of work. I get a lawyer, save my license, save my job, all of that stuff. But I'm still 60 grand in debt. I got no money coming in. I got bills to pay. What do you think? You think I take the insurance check from that wrecked bike and pay bills? I don't do that because I got plans and designs of what I could do to make myself happy. I ignore the bills and buy another bike. I got a knee stabilizer on my knee. I can't even bend my knee. I got a cast in my left hand, and I'm down in my driveway taking a knee stabilizer off, wrapping my knee as tight as I could wrap with an ace bandage, trying to get on that bike to go for a ride. My mother's living across the street, and she looks out the window and sees what's going on. I've never seen a 50-some-year-old woman run so fast in my life. And she's bawling and screaming at the same time, and she's like, what's wrong with you? I'm looking at her like, there's nothing wrong with you. What's wrong with you? I'm just going for a ride. Absolutely out of my mind and ignorant to that fact. And somehow she talked me off that bike, and thank God, because I probably would have died. But I healed up, and I'm riding. I remember I was riding one day, and with a bunch of my friends, and actually they were acquaintances, they weren't really friends. One of them had his girlfriend in the back of her bike, back of his bike, and my head tells me, it'll be a show off. She's gonna be so impressed by that she'll come talk to you and maybe leave him. So I remember being on this real windy road up in my area, extremely windy road, and I'm riding like a maniac, and they all catch up to me, and I'm in the passing lane. I decide I want to pull wheelie in the oncoming lane of this road. You can't really see very far in front of you. I get over in that lane, get away from the rest of the bikes, and rip the front end up, and it came up so fast because I had no gas in the tank and forgot that, man. I'm standing straight up in the air, I can't see in front of me, and as I'm doing this, the thought creeps into my head, you know what? When you put this thing up in the air, you're in an oncoming lane, there's no cars coming. You've been up for about 10 or 15 seconds right now. You cannot see in front of you. There's probably a car coming right at you. You're going to get head on. You better put the front of this bike down and get over in the right lane. First thought. Second thought was, you're doing a damn good job of showing up. Showing off. Keep it up. Which one do you think I picked? I picked option two, and I kept showing off. Needless to say, the tail of that broke. I came up so hard it landed on the tail, and it broke, and I was going. The bike was coming back on top of me at 75 miles an hour, so I dove, and if I would have took the course of that, if I would have followed the course of that bike that day, you'd be talking, another speaker would be standing at this podium today, because that bike got torn in half by the guardrails. I stayed in the middle road and just rolled until I came to a stop and walked away relatively unscathed. I had more, I had road rash out to yin yang, and I had more physical pain than I've ever been in my entire life. I'm walking around the AA meetings wrapped up like a mummy, and people look at me like, so what's wrong with this kid? There's something serious around with this kid. It is now, I'm 9 months sober coming out of that last accident, man, and I had a lot of the things I did that were absolutely insane in that 9 months. They were my plans and designs of what I thought I could do to get sober. I'm still trying to run my life, and I had that great sponsor. I just wasn't using because I had plans and designs and I needed to get rid of them. Into that day, 9 months, man, what popped into my head, man, is I remember my sponsor saying, man, if you do not treat this disease with those 12 steps, you're going to get worse and you're going to watch yourself get worse. And I looked at my life, man, as a whole, at that moment sober, 9 months sober. And when I came there, my life was so painful, it was ridiculous, man. Now it's about 10,000 times worse. The thought of dying and killing myself is coming in every 5 minutes, not every day. Every 5 minutes. And I was too scared to make another decision because I thought it was going to kill me. And the only reason I didn't want to die is because I had that sponsor. And that was my glimmer of hope. He told me there was a way out. I knew I wasn't listening to him. And I remember showing up at his door, man. And I looked at him. It's like God hit me over the back of the head with a 2x4, man. And said, wake up, pal. Your 9 lives are up. Your next decision's killing you, man. I can't save you anymore. That was the feeling I had inside, and I was scared that I was going to die and die. And I went to the sponsor, and I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't drink. I can't not drink. What's left but to kill myself? And I meant it. He's smiling as I'm telling him this. I'm like, dude, what are you smiling about? You're still going to kill myself. And he looks at me dead in the eye and says, congratulations, now you can get sober. And I didn't have a clue what the hell he's talking about, but thank God he did. And that was the day that I turned my will and my forward to care of God, as I understand him. God, for me at that time, is literally the direction of my sponsor. You know, the whole God thing, I just couldn't wrap my head around, man. It started with my sponsor. And all he did for me was lay out those principles outlined in that book. Three is a decision, followed immediately by a plan of rigorous action, a fact-finding, fact-facing process. And inventory is the first step. That's your fourth step. And it was explained to me, if I don't fall, I remember making that decision. He's like, great, you no more have a power greater than yourself in your life now, before 5 minutes ago, before you made the decision. It's just a decision. He said, you got 3 frogs on a log and one decides to jump. How many you got left? 30. You know, because one just decided he didn't jump and die. And that made sense to me. He's like, oh, man, he laid out the 4-step for me as outlined in the book. And let me tell you something about that 4-step, man. It was horrifying for me to do it, but it was absolutely life-changing. I put so much smoke and daggers up in that 4-step that I didn't want to do it, man. It was ridiculous how much fear I put into that. And it had absolutely nothing to do. It was the most freeing thing I've ever done in my life, man. It was the first time in my life I actually owned my truth. My life was my fault. I'm not the victim anymore. I am the volunteer. I did a 4-column inventory on resentment, fear, and sex. And what I found out, man, is I am the most selfish, self-centered human being on this freaking planet. I've spent my entire life thinking about absolutely nobody but me. But I hid behind the fact that I'm doing all these nice things for you and look what I'm doing. But I failed to notice that I expected something in return. Something as simple as I hold the door open for you. If you don't give me a thank you, I'm pissed off. I do not do anything for anybody unless it benefits me, man. And I saw that for the first time. I had a sponsor tell me that for 9 months, man. Every time I would call him with a problem, he would say the same thing to me. Selfish and self-centeredness, we think, is the root of all of our problems. Masked by 100 different forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. I'm like, why is this guy telling me this? He's nuts. I'm not selfish. And I would get off the phone with him. I had a mother tell me for over 20 years how selfish I was, and the world doesn't revolve around me, whether I think it does or not. And I didn't believe her. You know, and the book nails me to the floor when it says the alcoholic is the extreme example of selfishness, but he usually doesn't think so. And there's me, man. I can argue with it. And when I finally ran out of options, I finally became willing to take a look at me and own my truth. And my life was my fault. I would take the sickest girls in the world and slam them right down the middle of my life and blame them for my problems. Failed to notice that I put them there. You know, and when I owned my truth, man, I remember reading 5 to my sponsor, and I get done and he's smiling again. I'm like, what the hell is this guy smiling about, man? And he said, here's the deal. You did a great job on the inventory of whom, what you are. And whom, what you are, summary version, is a liar, thief, a cheat, a con artist, a selfish, self-centered prick. You spent your whole life thinking about absolutely nobody but you, and none of that's changed. You're still that guy standing right in front of me. I'm like, great, thanks for the hope. I'm going to kill myself now. He's like, but hang on a second. He's like, you know what? You have some options now. You want to change all? You want to change a little bit? You want to change nothing at all? I said, well, my best option is to put a little gun in my mouth. So how about all of it? And he got me in the 6 and 7, man. And that's a lifelong process. How I character build? I don't character build. I don't have the power to character build. I am the guy. I'm the guy that every morning my whole life with the intentions of being a good son to my mother, to be a good son to my father, to be a good brother to my sister, to be a good employee at work, to be a good student in school, to not cause trouble, to do the right things. I had intentions of being that guy every day, man. I went out in my life and I just ripped through people's lives and failed to live up to those intentions every single day. I don't have the power to be that guy. That power must come from God. And that's what 6 and 7 are about, is to invite that loving God into my life to change what's wrong with me. I discovered it in 4 and 5. He changes it in 6 and 7. My part, the 12 and 12 talks about in step 7, says, God doesn't render us white as snow and keep us there without our full cooperation. Which tells me, man, God's not going to do for me what I can do for myself. My job from that moment out of 5 was to practice the opposite of all the things that I saw to the best of my ability. Invite God in and ask Him for help to do that. And that's what I started to do. What I found out is I have defects of character I have my whole life. They keep showing up, man, and just don't go away. Some of them have faded and are gone, and others show up in its place, man. I get a whole list of them. I start praying for the willingness to let them go. I start inviting God into that. I start practicing the opposite in step 10. And I get, you know, I was trying to get three of them, and 10 more show up. Yeah, but thank God for that. Because there's always higher ground to go to. There's always a better way of life. There's always better relationships with myself, with God, and other human beings. I am never going to be perfect, and thank God. Because I make mistakes on a daily basis. I just make better quality mistakes. You know, and that's my purpose. My job, it's okay for me to make mistakes, but the second and third time it's not. Because I no longer have the excuse of lack of power being my dilemma. I now have the power to be the guy that I've intended to be. And if I'm not being that guy, it's my fault. Because I'm not inviting that power in. And step six is just about willingness, man. When the defects show up and I can't, and I keep getting hammered with them, the same ones over and over, the problem is I'm not letting them go. It's not God's willingness to take them. He's there and waiting, man. I just won't let my grips off them, man. And I am the guy that something goes by, man, I'll grab a hold of it and hold on to it until it beats me with an inch of my life. And then I'll finally let go of it. You know, and then God takes it like that. You know, and I remember getting a 6 and 7 and really doubting that God had the ability to do that. Man, I remember my sponsor presenting this to me. He's like, you know what? You should be the last person on the planet that doubts that God can remove your defects, because He's removed your greatest one you've ever owned. And I said, how do you feel? What's that? He's like, when's the last time you thought about drinking? And he stopped me right in my tracks. I couldn't tell him. I didn't know, man. He rendered me completely speechless. And I knew I didn't do it. You know, I am the guy who got not only obsessed about drinking every day, I drank every day. I didn't have a choice. I was doing it whether I wanted to or not. And I couldn't tell this man when the last time it was that I thought of drinking. How does that happen? So I had experience with God. He's like, if He can remove that, why the hell can't He remove the rest? He can and He will, man. You just need to ask for the help. And I started to do that on a daily basis. I started to apply step seven every day. 3 and 7 combined, man. What that does for me is I open my days with a 3rd-step prayer and a 7th-step prayer, as well as a number of others. And what it does for me is it fires me a general manager of my own life. And formally invites a loving God into my life to run my life and run my day. Why do I want to fire myself a general manager? Because a good manager would have fired me decades ago. I was absolutely out to destroy me. You know, and I invite a loving God into my life to be the director, for me to be His agent. He's the Father, we are His children. It says that simple cornerstone, an amazing foundation to be built. And I kept that. Every time the shovels would show up, I keep inviting them in. And it's like all of a sudden through that process, like I started to become lucky. Like I was trying. But I'm a skeptic. I'm a cynic. I don't believe. You know, I'm always been a guy. Coincidence, that doesn't happen, whatever, that would happen anyhow. The stuff, you know, it's like all of a sudden I became lucky. You know, and that started to happen so often and so much that I finally realized one day, there's no way that I'm lucky. I've been unlucky, the most unlucky person on the planet for over 24 years. Now all of a sudden I'm going to say I'm lucky and I'm doing this? Are you kidding me? There was too many things that I couldn't explain that were happening in my life. There was situations I was walking through with grace and dignity that I didn't have. You know, and I look back at those situations and see, how the hell did I handle that? How did I handle that as well as I handled that? I was blown away. And I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, there was something there doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. The book is clear. It says, none of us will fully comprehend or understand the power which is God. It is not my job to understand God. The days I'm trying to understand Him, I'm trying to play Him. I'm trying to shoot an angle and control it, and I'm out to destroy me. My best days are the days when I don't need to know. You know, and I have a lot of them today. You know, I used to think not knowing is what made me crazy. That wasn't it. It's needing to know that makes me crazy. Because I'm always a director when I need to know, man. And He got me in 8 and 9 and go back out and clean the wreckage of my past and get right with other human beings. And I had a lot of people I was hiding from. And I went out and I started chopping away at that list, man. It was very simple, man. Present the amends, ask how you can make it right, and shut up. It's that simple. You know, I sold your car. You know what? I walk up to that person and say, you know what? I sold your car. The estimated value of the car at the time of the theft was this. I'm willing to pay you this every week for this amount of time until you're paid off. If you're cool with that, that's what we're going to do. And I'm not going to go out and steal your neighbor's car, sell that to pay you for the car that I stole from you. It's not him. You know, amends means to change. You know, it means I'm going to stop doing what I'm telling you I'm sorry for, because I've said I'm sorry my whole life. You know, and then I kept doing the same things over and over and over. I remember the people close to me, my family telling me, sorry doesn't mean crap to me anymore. You know, you said that to me a million times, doesn't mean anything. And I was told, man, I make my amends through my actions, not my mouth. You know, saying sorry is one thing, but back it up with the action. And I went out and I started to slowly chip away at the past, man. And I had two amends left on my list, and one of them I was scared to death to make. And I remember walking into the store by my house after a meeting, and I walked into the store and I saw the lady I had to make the amends to. And I dove behind the potato chips waiting for her to leave, man. I'm peeking through the aisle waiting for her to go out the door. And I remember calling my sponsor that night, man, and telling him about that. He's like, if you're not completely free, you are not going to stay sober. You have to be the guy who walks out the door free. Because if you're not, if you're hiding from people, you're going to drink. I promise you that. And that scared me enough that I finally, and I never saw this lady. Never. I mean, I never saw her. And she ended up showing up 5 times in my life in the next week. After the 5th time, I'm like, I get it. Okay, I get it. And everything inside of me when I saw her that 5th time was trying to get me to turn around and walk away, and I found something pulling me towards her. And I sat down and I opened my mouth and I told her, you know, and I made the amends and asked her what I could do to make it right. And I got free that day. You know, but here's the gift. When I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous and started to apply, got into my 4-step, my sponsor got me right in the 84 to 88. You know, he's like, you need to be applying this stuff to your life every single day. I remember reading the first line of the 10-step, and it says, this stuff brings us to step 10. And that's the beginning of 84, you know, middle of 84, where he told me to start. And I'm like, dude, I'm on my 4-step. Why the hell am I on 10 already? My problem is that I never read the next line. That's why I'm sponsored. It says, we commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. Keyword being as. That tells me if I'm not cleaning up the wreckage of today, I'm never going to get completely free. Because I'm just going to keep adding to the list that I came here with, man. And eventually it's going to overwhelm me and it's going to cause me to go back out. If I'm correcting the mistakes I'm making daily and I'm slowly chipping away at the amends of the past, eventually I can walk out the door free, man. And that happened for me at the end of that last amends. And I realized I'm not hiding from anybody. I walked the earth free, man, today, man, not looking over my shoulder wondering who's coming up behind me because I screwed him over yesterday or a week ago or 10 years ago. I walked out the door free, man, and let me tell you, that was probably one of the coolest feelings I've ever got in my life. The attitude I talked about before, I hope you like me, but I'm okay if you don't. I'd rather be despised today for who I am than loved for who I'm not. And all of those showed up. I didn't expect any of that stuff, man, but they all showed up. And all of those 9-step promises that the book talks about, if you take the word alcohol and put it in front of every one of those promises, that's exactly what alcohol did for me. When I drank alcohol, I knew new freedom, new happiness. When I drank alcohol, I comprehended the word serenity, and I knew peace. When I drank alcohol, fear of people and economic insecurity left me. All of that stuff alcohol did for me. I got those same 9-step promises from drinking when it worked in the beginning. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, apply these 9 steps, I get the same exact promises. But here's the key, no consequences. I don't go to jail as a result of the first 9 steps. I don't get relationships don't go to hell and I'm left alone because of the first 9 steps. I don't get fired from work because of the first 9 steps. I get the same exact promises with no consequences coming behind it. You know, and I have 10, 11, and 12 to apply to my life. 4 through 9 got me right with me, God, and you. 10, 11, and 12 keep me growing in relationships with me, God, and you. Because if I don't do that on a daily basis, I will fade back into who I used to be and I will drink again and I will die. What a gift it is to be forced to learn how to live. I don't have a choice. I got a loaded gun to the back of my head that says either do this or die. Because 90% of the time, I don't want to do any of this. Thank God for that loaded gun, man. Because it gives me a life that I don't deserve. You know, the book says things like you'll be rocketing into a 4th-dimensional existence. You'll know a level of peace and happiness you can't even wrap your head around. You know, the 4th-dimensional existence, man, I heard Sally talk about this, man. Albert Einstein called the 4th-dimensional existence time. It's a thing I've been trying to run away from my whole life right here, right now. The book tells me I can be rocketing right here, right now, okay, and at peace. And that's exactly what's happened in my life. That's why I'm still here today. I make mistakes on a daily basis, and I'm not perfect. I've made a lot of mistakes sober, and I've made some big ones. You know, but I've been willing to clean the wreckage up as I make it. Or sometimes not immediately, but I'm eventually willing because I don't want to drink again, and I know I'm gone if I don't. And my life, I don't deserve the life that I live today. I just don't. I don't deserve the things that I have in my life. I don't deserve the relationships I have. You know, my family, my dad, I disowned my dad for 4 years prior to getting Alcoholics Anonymous. I cut him right out of my life. He lived a 1/2 mile away. And I just shut him right out of my life, completely disowned him, and I hated his guts. And I have a great relationship with my father today. You know, my relationship with my mother is far better than it's ever been. My sister, she's one of my best friends. She's sober 6 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought she was going to die of this disease. You know, the things that happened here are absolutely mind-blowing, man. And I'm just, I'm excited to see what's coming next. You know, every time I've gotten to a point in my recovery where I don't think it can get better, and I've said that a lot, it's always gotten better. What I found out is there's not a stopping point here. I can't wrap my head around how my life could be better than what it is right now. But I know it's gonna. And that's what makes me excited to see how it's gonna happen. You know, and I've had my life get better through bad circumstances as well as good ones. You know, who knows what God's will is, man, but I do know this, man. My best interest is to walk around this planet trying to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. Because the book promises me if I do that, He'll take care of all my needs. And I will never be left alone. I am not alone, and I cannot be hurt. I got God on my side, and people like my sponsor walking the face of this planet. You know, and that sponsor coached me through those steps and saved my life, man. I remember being 5 years sober, and he drank again. Thank God that man didn't allow me to rely on him, because if he did, I'm dead right now. And I see that happen over and over and over again in Alcoholics Anonymous. That man forced me to rely on God, because when he went back out, I had God centered in my world, and I didn't have to go back out too. You know, I need something that will not fail me. And the only thing I know of is power greater than myself. And the cool part is that power has been inside of me my whole life. The book is clear on that. It says, deep down inside of every man, woman, child is a fundamental ideal of God. I hated that word every because I knew it meant me. But what I found out is that God was there. I just had him completely blocked. And I needed to clear the wreckage between me and him and get connected to him. Once I did, my life has been forever changed. I got dreams and hopes today. I got things in my life that I am absolutely... I heard a speaker at Mutum said, he believes your dreams are God's personal gift to you. The day he said that, I'm going after my dreams, man. I've been chasing them ever since. I'm not going to be the guy who wakes up at 60 years old if I'm braced enough, long enough to live that long and say I forgot to live. You know, I love to fish. One of my favorite things to do is I spend a lot of time in the water and I bass fish. And my dream is to be pro someday. I'm going after Hammer and Tom. You know, if it don't happen, great. God's got something better in store. And I truly believe that, man, but I'm going after it. Man, I dream big today. I serve a big God. There's nothing in my life that is not possible, man, and I'm going after it, man. Because of you people and God's grace, I'm able to go after things in my life. I'm able to have a life that I don't deserve and can never earn. You know, and then I get to come here and try to share that with you. And then I watch these dead eyes come into the room from a newcomer, man, and I get to watch those lights come on. And I get to watch their life be forever changed. And be a part of that is ridiculous, man, because be clear, I am not doing that. We're just tiny links in a big human chain that's got God all over it. You know, to be a part of that is ridiculous, man. I remember sitting in my home group a couple months ago, and there was a guy sitting in that room, man, that was completely broken, man. Family is destroyed. This guy did so much damage to his family that he has no shot in hell of ever getting his kids back. He's nothing. It's gone. It's removed. It's clear on that point. And 6 months later, that guy's sitting in that meeting getting a 6-month coin. And he's got his kid on his lap sitting up looking at him like he's his hero. How do you move from there to there and tell me there's no God? I get to see God's grace every day, man. I get to see him change your lives. And I get to watch him in mind in retrospect most times. And back to the last piece I want to share, man, is there is no stopping point. If there's a stopping point of how good this can be, I'm out. Because I'll get bored and I'll leave, man. I know me. I got to see Clancy Emerson speak about 5 years ago down in New York. And after he got done talking, there's about 50 people surrounding him. And I got about 15 seconds to talk to him. And I said this. I said, I know you're busy here. I said, but I got one question for you. What's the most prolific thing you've ever found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, kid, every year I read that book and apply what it says to my life, that book gets smarter and my life continues to get better. It's after 52 years. Please tell me where the downside to this is. There's never a stopping point of how big the buzz can get here. I was a pig out there, and I'm an absolute pig in here. If there's a bigger buzz, I want to know about it. I don't ever remember saying in my life, no, thank you, I've had enough. Not once have I ever said that, man. And I'm chasing a healthier and a bigger buzz here than I ever found out there. It's the only reason a guy like me is still here. And there's a paragraph in the end of Dr. Bob's story that I'm going to close with, man. And it says, if you're agnostic, you're atheist, a skeptic, or a cynic, or have any other form of intellectual pride that keeps you from accepting what's in this book, it says we feel sorry for you. But it says, if you are an alcoholic that wants to quit drinking for good and for all, and by the way, for good and for all is forever. It's not one day at a time. We live life one day at a time here. you know, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I don't get up every day and walk on eggshells wondering what's causing me to drink today. Nothing's causing me to drink. I have a God-centered in my life, man. I'm no longer powerless. If I stop applying these principles to my life, I will become powerless and I will drink again. But I never have to live that way again. And it says, if you take half the effort, you put in the chasing, in the habit of chasing that first drink, you put half that effort into this book and do what it says, it never fails. And your Heavenly Father will never leave you down. No loopholes and never. Alcoholics Anonymous works without a shadow of a doubt. And I've never seen one case fail. Do what that book asks them to do and then try to help the next guy do the same thing under the guidance of a sponsor. Never seen it. If a sponsor's over 20 years sober, it's never seen it. You know, and I share that I'm recovered because that's what I am. I'm not cured. You know, and here's how powerful my God is, and I'll close. My MO, and I told you in my story, man, my MO was to rob medicine cabinets on a daily basis. I worked outside the house. I would find a way in and steal out of their medicine cabinet. My job today for a living is I work for Rebath. I'm in a bathroom every single day. I have one desire whatsoever, to crack open a medicine cabinet and steal their pills. If that isn't evidence of a loving, powerful God, I don't know what is. And I'm very grateful for that. And I'm grateful for you people that have given me that God and that grace in my life. Because without you, I can't do any of this. So thank you for having me here, and God bless. Thank you.